Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. As we celebrate our fourth anniversary this week, we touch on a lot of big issues. The issues of abortion. We also talk about Ukraine. And we talk about the pandemic with leaders on all of those issues. We'll talk with Congressman Adam Schiff, who just this week traveled to Kyiv, Ukraine, to meet with President Zelensky there. We'll talk with the director of the CDC, Rochelle Walensky, visiting California this week, talking about the pandemic and where do we go from here. But let's begin with the issue of abortion. In a moment, we talk with Gloria Allred, who actually represented Jane Roe for decades on the issue of abortion, the Roe behind Roe v. Wade. But let's begin with a look at where things are at this week. Protests this week all over the state and the country reacting to the Supreme Court's draft opinion overturning Roe v. Wade. That would make abortion a state's rights issue.
This is about controlling women. We know that.
California Governor Gavin Newsom visiting Planned Parenthood near downtown L.A.
California women and Planned Parenthood support Gavin Newsom.
The governor's reelection campaign already out with a new TV ad on the topic. I asked him about this tweet, which says, quote, "This will be the defining issue of the 2022 election."
Why is this issue more important than inflation and homelessness and everything else happening here
in California?
Because
rolling back your fundamental constitutional rights has a profound impact across the spectrum of issues. It's a foundational issue.
The top Republican in California's assembly, James Gallagher, responding on Twitter, quote, "You would think the explosion of violent murders in L.A. and the fact that more Californians than ever can't afford a home and are struggling to make it through the week might be higher on the priority list. And he is the last person who should talk about constitutional rights."
We will not back down. We will double down.
California's top Democratic leaders want voters to pass a constitutional amendment in November, guaranteeing the right to an abortion in California's constitution.
Women's daily experiences will be very different depending on the type of state they live in.
Here at Planned Parenthood, they're preparing for an influx of people coming here from other states. The governor says California is here to help.
Should taxpayers be funding people coming from other states to come here? What does a sanctuary state of California look like?
When people come in for care, we take care of them, period. That goes to your question. Regardless of their ability to pay, regardless of their status across a spectrum.
It takes us back to states' rights.
Pastor Jack Hibbs of Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, is praying that the justices go through with overturning Roe.
For me as a Christian and as an abortion survivor, I'm kind of thrilled.
Now for a different view. Attorney Gloria Allred used to represent Norma McCorvey, who was known as Jane Roe, the woman behind Roe v. Wade. This issue is the cause of her life. Gloria Allred, welcome back to The Issue. It's always great to see you.
You too, Alex.
We know this is a draft opinion. It still could change. But when you actually saw those words about overturning Roe in print, what went through your mind?
It was just shocking. It was really devastating, horrific, and really not for myself, but for all of those who are going to be impacted in a negative way. And mainly, it's going to have a negative impact, Alex, on young women, on poor women, on women in rural areas. And some of them will want to travel to haven states like California and New York and some other states where abortion will remain legal, but they won't have the money to travel. They won't have the bus fare. And so they may be forced into mandatory motherhood. And some of these laws are so cruel. They even force a rape victim, a victim who has been raped by her father, for example, which is also incest, a crime, and force that child, 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old, to take a pregnancy to term and deliver a child that is the child of the rapist. Some of these laws in some of these states, Alex, also will not allow exceptions for the life of the mother. Even if the woman's life is in danger, at risk because of the pregnancy, she'll be allowed to die. She won't be able to get an abortion, even if her life might end if she gives birth. This is just outrageous.
Gloria, you've talked about your rape and abortion
on this show before. A few years ago, it seemed like a throwback to another era. Are you thinking about that experience in a new way now, that it could be a reality again?
I have to say that when I first heard of this draft opinion, I had to take a deep breath, because I know what it's like to be triggered. It brought back all of my memories of being raped at gunpoint in Mexico when I was on vacation in my 20s, and that was in the 1960s. And coming back to California, finding out that I'm pregnant at that time in California in the 60s, it was a crime for a doctor or nurse to provide an abortion, although it was not a crime for a woman to have one, but that meant we had to go to back alley people who would provide abortions if you paid them. That's what I did. And I was left by the man who did it in a bathtub, hemorrhaging, having the bathtub fill up with my own blood, ultimately developing 106-degree fever from an infection from that abortion that he did illegally. And I couldn't get help. An ambulance ultimately was called. I was taken to the hospital. In those days in California, they could only take us in the hospital if we were bleeding to death. They wouldn't take us in to do the abortion. And that's where a nurse said to me, she was obviously anti-choice, "I hope you learned a lesson." And well, of course, I did learn a lesson, but it wasn't the lesson she wanted me to learn. It was the lesson that abortion must be legal. It must be safe. It must be affordable. And all women must have access to abortion. That's what happened to me. And I will never forget that. And that's why I have this passion to make sure that our daughters, our granddaughters, our sisters, our mothers, our aunts never have to suffer what I did.
We thank you for sharing your story. I know that cannot be easy, but it's important, I think, for people to hear. But there are such different perspectives on this. We spoke to a California mom named Rebecca Hagen, who began the abortion process and then stopped it. Here's what she told us.
I'm just so grateful that I never have to wonder who Zachariah would have been, and that instead I get to watch his little life unfold right before my eyes.
That's the son that almost was aborted. There are millions of people in this country who say abortion is murder, it's killing babies, and it's immoral. What do you say to them?
Well, they're entitled to their opinion, and if they would like to take their pregnancies to term and deliver, you know, God bless them. They have that choice. They have that right. And they should have that choice. And nobody should stop them if that's what they want to do. But nobody should stop women and girls who want to have a choice to have a legal and safe abortion as well.
They would say who's looking out for the unborn, that the unborn is not being represented here and that this is killing a life.
Okay. Well, I don't believe that a fertilized egg should have more rights than an adult woman. It's as simple as that. Now, there are some people who have their religious views, but we have a line in this country between church and state, and they should not be imposing their religious views on others who have different religious views or who have no religious views at all.
You're expected to be a part of a day of action on May 14th. What does the fight ahead look like? What's the specific strategy to accomplish what you want here?
On May 14th, Saturday, there is going to be a rally all over this nation, in every state in this nation, in support of the right to choose abortion. And this year, I will be one of the featured speakers at the rally at Los Angeles City Hall. And it's 10 until 2. And I am right now inviting everyone who is listening, who is pro-choice, to come to that rally. Each one of you can make a difference. Each one of you must make a difference. I'm fired up and I'm ready to go. And I hope you are too.
Well, we can tell that you are fired up. We also want to just take a moment to have a little bit of fun. On a lighter note, this show is our 4-year anniversary show. You are our most frequent guest. You were also the first to ever dance on this show. That's you on a previous anniversary show when we got to do it in person. We'll be back in person with you soon. Gloria, I just want to say thank you so much for all the support, for believing in our show right when we were getting going, and for all the great dances.
Well, happy anniversary to you, Alex. I wish you many more anniversaries. I'm excited that your show is started in Los Angeles. It's in San Diego. It's in San Francisco. I can't name all of the cities that it's in. So I raise a cup to you, and I'm dancing and waiting to be there in person. Of course, I'm going to have to lead. You're going to have to follow.
Know anything about Gloria? She always leads. Still to come, we're going to talk to the director of the CDC. But before we go to break, Gloria, we want to have Gloria dance to a clip from her documentary, Seeing All Red, which is available on Netflix right now. Gloria, take it away.
Uh-oh.
Gloria, you're always on the run now. Running after somebody. You gotta get him somehow.
Our thanks to Gloria Allred. Now, let's talk about Ukraine with Congressman Adam Schiff.
Adam Schiff from California.
Congressman Adam Schiff met for 3 hours with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kyiv, Ukraine. He was part of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's delegation flying in on a secret mission. Right after he got off the plane in Burbank, he gave his first interview to The Issue Is.
So what was that like? I mean, walk us through that moment. We saw you shake his hand. What was it all like?
Well, it was really inspiring. I knew a lot about him. I had studied him. Of course, he was a figure that featured prominently in the first impeachment trial. It was the same President Zelensky who President Trump was withholding military aid for to get that political favor. So I knew a lot about him, but it's one thing to know a lot about something. It's another to sit down with them and to see, you know, the kind of calm that he demonstrates in the midst of war, a comprehensive knowledge he has of the military strategy, of the humanitarian needs. He's inspired not just Ukrainians, but people all around the world, including a great many here in the United States.
So you guys spoke for 3 hours. What'd you talk about? What'd he say? What'd you say to him?
The first hour and a half was basically sitting around a conference table and going over, okay, this is the state of the battlefield. This is what we need. We talked about what we're doing, what our allies are doing, what we're not yet doing. I asked a lot about our intelligence sharing. I wanted to make sure that we were getting them good real-time information. And then we moved into another room and had dinner and continued the conversation. It was all work. I mean, it wasn't making small talk. When you consider that prior to holding office, he was a comedic actor in a sitcom playing a comedic actor who becomes president of Ukraine. It was really astounding to see how he has become this Churchill of Ukraine.
How is he maybe different in person than what you see on TV?
He is, and you might get this sense from him on TV, but he is utterly without affect. I mean, he's the president of a country at war, but he doesn't stand on ceremony. There's no pomp. There's no circumstance. So he comes across really as just a normal human being.
What was he specifically asking you for, and are you going to be able to deliver on that?
The battlefield has changed. The war has entered a new phase. So he was asking us for more long-range artillery, and we are sending it. Lots of howitzers, lots of ammunition. But there are other systems that would have an even bigger impact, multiple rocket launch systems that I think we should provide, as well as anti-ship munitions to take out some of that Russian Black Sea fleet so that Ukraine can once again open the port of Odessa.
Was it scary driving into that? Were you concerned for your safety? What was it like?
We had a lot of security around us. So at that level, you feel secure. But at the same time, the Russians are launching cruise missiles into Kyiv. Some of them are targeted. Some of them seem to be pretty random. And so the citizens of Kyiv, you know, have to live with the fear that, you know, they could see up in the sky a cruise missile, and before they could react, their life would be over. We got a vivid sense of that being there and knowing that if you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, then it's lights out.
Was your wife or family kind of concerned about you going?
I couldn't really tell my family where I was going.
Not even your wife?
Well, I'm sure that they can figure out, because I can't tell them where I'm going, that I'm going somewhere that's not safe. But when I was out of harm's way, I let my wife know so that she wouldn't worry any longer than was necessary.
What's your big takeaway from this trip?
That the Ukrainians have a will to fight if they are given the means, that they have a real chance to push Russia back, but also that I couldn't help but think of the eerie echo of the 1930s. Once again, there is a dictator in Europe who believes that it is his God-given right to subjugate other peoples, that other countries around him aren't real countries. It's very reminiscent of Hitler and his view that whether it's the Sudetenland or Austria, the Reich had a right to these territories and peoples. And so it seems awfully familiar. Obviously, the parallels only go so far. But we haven't seen a massive invasion in Europe like this since World War II.
Just one last note. This week is the four-year anniversary of our show, The Issue Is. You were with us on the very first week, and you're with us now on our anniversary week. Thank you for all your support of the show over the years. We really appreciate it.
I have really enjoyed it, and you haven't asked, but the song that I'm thinking about the most right now, and I don't know why, given I'm a very proud Californian, is Billy Joel's New York State of Mind. I keep hearing that piano riff in my head. And so I know you often like to ask me a music question at the end, so I'm just volunteering that for your viewers.
Do you want to sing some of it for us?
I don't think I can go that far.
Some folks like to get away. No. All right. Congressman Schiff, thank you so much.
Great to see you.
All right.
Up next, we talk to the director of the CDC. But since we do take requests, we go to break with Billy Joel.
I don't have any reasons. I left them all behind. Just in a New York state of mind.
Our thanks to Congressman Schiff. Let's talk about where we're at with the pandemic. This week, CDC Director Rochelle Walensky visited Watts, where she met with L.A. County leaders. And they were celebrating Cinco de Mayo at the time, so there's this mariachi musician behind us, which you can kind of hear. But we did have a chance to talk to her about the pandemic and also abortion and Title 42 in the border. But let's begin with the pandemic.
Where are we in terms of the pandemic right now?
Well, I would say right now we are in a way better place than we were just a year ago. So we have vaccines with extraordinary efficacy against severe disease and death. We have boosters that are available. In fact, we have second boosters that are available. We have tests that are available both as antigen and as PCR. And we have therapeutics that are working really well to, again, prevent severe disease and death.
We saw Vice President Harris got COVID. She took Paxlovid. Is that something that people should take if they get COVID? What should they do now if they're vaccinated but they get it?
Really important question. So first of all, Paxlovid is available, right? It's really available now nationwide. So if people need and want access to it, they should be able to have access to it. Importantly with Paxlovid is it works best if you take it early. So if you have symptoms, we encourage you to get tested quickly so that if you're eligible for Paxlovid, you can have access through our many test and treat sites across the country. And we do encourage people to get access to those sites so that they could take Paxlovid if they're at risk of severe disease.
Let's also talk about immigration, which is a big issue here in California. Title 42 set to end. That, of course, is a rule that has made it easier to send people back to wherever they're coming from if they're trying to cross the border. There are some that say, like, if we still need the mask mandate on planes, if we still need some of these other rules in place, why shouldn't we extend Title 42? What do you say to those people?
You know, I think masks are very different than a Title 42 order, so I think that they belong in different buckets. But importantly, I think, especially just given what I said, we now have the tools to combat this pandemic. We have vaccines, we have boosters, we have treatments, we have tests. And in the context of all of those tools, we at CDC did not feel like a public health law of Title 42 was necessary. And we've been working really closely with Homeland Security to be able to take down Title 42 in a a mechanism that allows them to do the preparation that they need to do so safely.
And one other big issue this week, of course, is abortion. You're one of the highest ranking public health officials in the country who happens to be a woman as well. Your take on what we saw this week in terms of that draft opinion and how that might impact public health going forward?
I'm concerned as how it will impact public health moving forward. One of the things that I think will be really challenging is equal access to maternal care needs across the country. We do know that this will decrease access for many women, and often many women who don't have the resources to cross state lines. And so I'm concerned from a public health standpoint of what it will do for access to care.
And last question, what a time to come in as CDC director, right? How crazy it's been. Going forward, sort of what do you think is the thing that the agency's doing the best and maybe the thing that needs most in terms of changes, and is that maybe messaging?
You know, one of the things I think that's really important is to recognize that we came into a pandemic in this country with a frail public health infrastructure that had been underinvested in for decades. And so one of the things that I'm really working on, not just at CDC, but at public health around the country, is to invest in an upskilled workforce that is diverse as the communities that we serve, to invest in our data systems and our data modernization so our data are interoperable, and to make sure all of our local jurisdictions and CDC have the laboratory capacity, all through an important equity lens.
Dr. Rochelle Walensky, thank you so much for the time, and happy Cinco de Mayo. We had like a whole mariachi thing going on during all this, so don't usually get that.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. We got a break with more from that musician celebrating Cinco de Mayo. Our thanks to Dr. Walensky, and our thanks to you for listening. As we celebrate 4 years of this show, we are so grateful for the opportunity to do it each and every week. We hope you'll follow me in social media, let us know what you think of the show, and tell other people about it. We'll see you next week for a special show with Bob Costas as we return for The Issue Is. Have a great week.